Now we start with okay, so now we've just established, previously we just established that the Shastra is the basis of knowledge, and the Shastra is always correct. And if there's seeming contradiction in the Shastras, both opinions are correct. It's just a matter of, for the purpose of the individuals, what is their goal, the situation, then, you know, one Shastra may be preferred over another. And then that is generally established by the Acharya. They generally will choose for us what is the best application. Like that, or, you know, whatever the variations are. Okay. Now we start into who is all this laws for? Right? Now we've established the Shastra is perfect. We've established the Shastra's where it comes from, its origin, coming from the Lord, coming down through Brahma. And we have established, and we have established the aspect of time. And now we're going to establish, you know, who is qualified to learn this and what are the stages that they go through. So that's basically the whole rest of the book. After establishing who's qualified, then they will go start take them through their life. In other words, they just take an example of a person and just take him step by step how he would go through his life from Garbhodan up to death. Right? And in that, then they go through and discuss all these different things. So it's very interesting. You know, one was thinking, well, what would be the layout of the book? Well, that's the layout of the book. You know, it just starts from when that and goes up, goes through all the ashrams, takes them from birth up to sannyas, and then it goes into the varnas. I mean, varnas, many of it's discussed here, but specifically the ashram aspect, and then it gets into the king. Like that. Okay. 16. Know that he for whom the performance of the ceremonies, beginning with the rite of impregnation, Garbhodan, and ending with the funeral rite, Antyeshti, is prescribed, while sacred formulas are being recited, is entitled to study these institutes, but no other man whatsoever. In other words, someone who is sanctified has gone through the rituals. That they should study, others should not. That is the point. Because otherwise they won't understand. The samskars are there to purify us so that we can understand better. Of course, the best of all samskars is if one is done, initiated into the holy name. And then that is supported with the pancharatrik, that changes the body. And that is, you know, the perfection of all. But the point is that is there, so if one can act purely on that platform, that's very nice. Then there's no need of more. Like that. And even these, so many, it means even all these things are very light and easily understood and accepted. Because one is acting either on the platform of the holy name or on the platform of the sadhana. But if one has to extend that and work according to more the conditioned nature, according to the, recognizing the nature and working more prominently with that, then the varnashram comes in. So then when the varnashram comes in, then one should go through the samskaras. So Prabhupada recommends that the dvijas, you know, that they should go through the samskaras. You know. Everybody should go through it, especially they should be. They are known because they do go through it. Means in other words, they have children through Garbhodan. They bring up their children through the samskaras. Like this. Okay. 17. That land created by the gods, which lies between the two divine rivers, Saraswati and Drishavati. It doesn't mention it here. Okay. I don't know what is Drishadvati. Do you know that?
Yeah.
is called Brahmavarta. 18. The custom handed down in regular succession since time immemorial among the four chief castes, Varnas, and the mixed races of that country is called the conduct of virtuous men. Okay, so the behaviors of those who live in this land, that is the behavior of virtuous men, because they follow this tradition. 19. The plain of the Kurus, the country of the Matsyas, Pankalas, and Surasenakas, these form indeed the country of the Brahmarshis, Brahminical sages, which ranks immediately after Brahmavarta.
This is Brahmavarta?
Yeah, it seems to be Brahmavarta. So this means it must be a smaller area. We should find out what is that. What is this? Drishavati. Huh? Yeah. So maybe you could look, see where is these two rivers. Because that seems to be, yeah, Brahmavarta. And then the...
This actually cuts off India on the top. It starts from... over the Ganga, from over Hastinapur, and comes all the way across Gujarat and empties out into the sea, where Dwaraka was.
Uh-huh.
So Drishavati must be somewhere down south, and what's in between.
Something, yeah. Something, that area is very special.
Have you read the Krishna Samhita?
Krishna Samhita.
About the Natakura?
No. I looked at it a touch, but not really seriously.
He speaks, like he writes... a recreation of the history of India,
yeah. Uh-huh.
And he speaks about this tract of land,
mm-hmm,
as being the original place where the Aryans were living.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a little bit wild.
Yeah, you know why? I was just thinking the other day, why does he write like that? Because he says that this book is for... He says both books are written for Uttamas or Kanistas, but this is written for the Madhyans. Madhyans. Yeah. So now, here's the point. It's not that he's saying this is the history. I mean, he's given a general history, because everybody accepts the general, but the thing is when you say that this is the fact, like this, many people can't get into it. So his point is whether they accept that, you know, Bhima was 18 feet tall and Arjuna was, you know, so much, and, you know, they had all these different astras and this and that, that's secondary, you know, or even less. The important thing is they accept God, and they accept that they're his servant, and they accept that the process is chanting his holy name. That's the real thing. Because if they take that up and chant, then with time they'll be purified. They will understand these other things anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So the thing is, it's like generally in the West, people don't know about these things, so we can just immediately just present these things, and they have no other doubts or any other difficulties.
Mm-hmm.
But in India, because they have read all these scriptures in this, and especially if they've had, you know, Western education, And at the time of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, then that was very prominent. Your senior, your aristocratic people and intelligentsia would go to these British schools, so they get the British training from the, you know, from the priests and all that. So they would very much try to downgrade the Vedic culture and the literature and all that. So they would have these natural doubts. So then, as soon as you bring up, then they'll bring these things up. Well, what about this and what about that? So they try. So based on some insignificant, not important point, they'll try to write off the whole Vedic culture and philosophy. So therefore, then Bhaktivinoda gives the point that when they bring up this point, then you just say, oh, this is this group of nine kings, and that, oh, that's just this.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like, they're happy.
Mm-hmm.
Then you can get down to actually discussing real philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just, these are tools for the Madhyama to use,
mm-hmm,
to just cut through the Maya that will be there in these, in people who think they know something,
mm-hmm,
like that. So when you're dealing with the intelligentsia and all those things, the academics and that, and they bring up these things, or people who are into different things and they worry about the caste system or, you know, women's rights or these different things, then you have something you can just say, finish. Then they just drop the topic and you can get down to the reality.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not that he's pointing this out, and otherwise it looks like it contradicts the Bhagavatam. But what he's doing is saying, you say like this, and then they just drop the subject. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah, definitely.
Huh? Does that make sense? Okay. He was quite bewildered. Mm-hmm. Why it's so different. You understand the point?
Yeah.
Huh? You understand? Okay. So, okay. Anything else or like that? Okay, so then the plain of the Kurus, okay, means these countries, means we'd have to look at what those are, is the country of the Brahmarshis, Brahminical sages, which ranks immediately after Brahma Avarta. Then 20, from a Brahmana born in that country, let all men on earth learn their several usages. So that would mean is that someone from this place, they've grown up in the culture, they've gone through all these samskaras, they've actually experienced it, seen it, you know. They've been born into a family where someone has had that proper consciousness and conceived such children. Because as we mentioned, that the Ayurveda mentions that the husband and wife should, if they want to have a child, decide what kind of child and discuss it. What are the qualities? You know, what will be their like duties and application in life? Like, you know, he's an astrologer, or he's a preacher, or he, like this, you know? Like Bhaktivinoda Thakur decided he wanted someone who was a ray of Vishnu. Mm-hmm. So he had made that determination before mm-hmm. having a child, a sankalpa. He's made that determination, this is what he wants. Mm-hmm. And so then one can attract such persons.
I heard that. I gave a class, and I mentioned that in the class. Somebody put the class on com and sent it out. It was some excerpts from the class. And then I got back some response from a couple of astrologers.
Uh-huh.
And one of them said that a certain boy and a certain girl can only have, according to their karma, their whatever, they can only attract a certain type of child.
But this, yeah. There's a lot of variety in there, mm-hmm. because a personality has a lot of, mm-hmm. you know, it's just like you have your very Krishna conscious moments and you have your very rough moments. Mm-hmm. But the point is according to karma, but there is beyond the karma mm-hmm. of the spiritual. Mm-hmm. The astrologers have to realize their limit. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I've seen nowadays they're overconfident of what they know. They'll see even God works according to it, know what God chooses it. But within that, there are different levels of purity. You know, it's just like you have a very strong yoga for association with women. And generally you'll see they'll always interpret that this person, oh, get married, this, that, and so many things. That same yoga is exactly what makes for someone can be very detached. So it all depends upon how you take it, what level of purity you take it. You can have a quality. Determined means I'll make adjustments, but I'll get the goal. Stubborn is I want the goal, but I'm attached to the method. And therefore, when it doesn't work, I still fight to do it. You know, to establish the way I want to do it rather than just the situation. Maybe it's just. It could be it's the batteries running out. Ask Krishna. That or
Krishna. Krishna, he told me that sometimes people have certain karmas, like somebody has lots of association with woman, he's charged, and then he takes a sense control, then all these feminine qualities may manifest in him, like intelligence, good memory, you know?
Oh, and yeah, yeah. Like you get that one? Means it says. Says it's very shows that there'll be a very strong association with women, but that he says it could also mean the feminine qualities of like mentioned the Gita, mm-hmm. you know, patience, intelligence, all these different things like that. Mm-hmm. So it's very fine. He says it depends how far they go. Mm-hmm. You can look at the chart, and exactly what you see right there, you can take from that. Mm-hmm. Right? It's okay. Then you can go to the next level is you take how they influence each other. Mm. Then you go down to the next level is what is the strength of those planets? Mm. And you can keep going. Mm-hmm. And it gets finer, finer, finer. So it's a matter of how far they can take it. Mm-hmm. So the point is within a personality, there's so much, how you say, broadness in the personality. So within that, that's what can be done. And within that, depending upon how senses are more, you know, open or more controlled, you know, it's just many, many things are there. So they can...
So there is like independence in the free will of the living entity.
Yeah, yeah.
So your chart is just your karma. And in the mode of ignorance, then the spectrum of your choices that you can make in your life is about this matter. Whatever is in your chart is just going to happen to you because you're so conditioned by the modes. Mm. When you're in mode of passion, the spectrum of free choice becomes a bit larger because then you can kind of like be responsible, you know. Something happens to you due to your upbringing or whatever external stimulus, and then you have the responsibility to choose what you're going to respond to.
Mm.
And then when you have goodness, then it becomes much larger.
The spectrum.
Like Vishwanath Chakravarti says that one becomes a devotee by the mercy of the devotee, because the devotee gives you bhakti. Bhakti only comes from his own spirit will. Mm. But the devotee's mercy kindles your independence to accept it and develop yourself as a devotee. So the independence is there, but when you're in the lower modes, then it's virtually not existent because you're so much into the modes that you just keep doing whatever happens to you.
Mm.
But once you get up to goodness, of pure goodness, then you just have independent choice of whatever you want to do.
Mm.
You can just transcend your chart altogether.
Yeah.
You can just step out and do something else.
Because the thing is the rules are there, Krishna's rules are there, and they're built according to these four varnas and ashrams. And so all that fits nicely within the planets and all that. It's the planets are the ones who are just the hands-on managers of getting certain things done.
Mm-hmm.
Their potencies come from the Vishnu Murtis above them. You know, like Mars comes from Nrisingadev. You know, so the potencies that he has comes from Nrisingadev's potencies. You know, and those potencies then from the Vaikuntha are coming from Dwarka, and Dwarka they're coming from Vrindavan. You know, so that means ultimately they go back to Radha and Krishna. So it's just a matter of how much levels you know. Because someone knows their own area, therefore they're called an Upadhyaya.
Mm-hmm.
And they can be expert in their area and know vast amounts. But in the Vedic literature, one who understands purpose behind them and can give the total picture, that's the Acharya.
Mm-hmm.
So an Upadhyaya has to bow his head to someone who knows broader than that.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, then they don't know so much.
Mm-hmm.
You know? They just don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen, you know, like we had in Vrindavan, the big Sanskrit pundit there. And, you know, they call their book, even in Vaikuntha, even the leaves don't fall. But that's because he doesn't know what goes on in Vaikuntha. Sometimes the separation from Krishna is so great from the devotees, and Radharani and that is lamenting. All the leaves off of all the trees fall off at once. Every leaf, not even just one or two, every leaf falls off.
Mm-hmm.
And then, when her mood changes and she becomes happy, then every leaf sprouts new.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So just that they use that, it's a very, very proud presentation.
Mm-hmm.
Is that you guys are saying so many things that even the leaves don't fall in Vaikuntha. But that's because they just study, basically, grammar, you know, and the sambandha, some aspects of the sambandha, you know, the technicality side, but actually the abhideya they don't even know at all.
Mm-hmm. What to speak of
prayer. Yeah, what to speak of prayer. So one has to realize one's limit. Problem is the upadayas have more of a tendency to be proud because they know one area and they think it's all in all. So it's like the astrologer will think that by astrology I can tell everything. You know, they have that mentality, you know, because they mention even God follows, you know, but God chooses whatever. That's another thing. He's created the system. But the point is why would they think that what you said doesn't apply? This is why I say this, the the mentality can become restricted.
Mm-hmm.
It's because if we go by, they can only have a child according to their karma.
Mm-hmm.
But the point is that according to their conditioned nature, they're only going to want a particular or a particular group of kind of child anyway.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, if you get together, a king and a queen,
mm-hmm.
they're thinking of a prince. They're not thinking of a big Sanskrit scholar.
Mm-hmm.
But now within that, you know, what kind of qualities do they want them to have? In other words, they fix the mind.
Mm-hmm.
You know, rather than they just get together and try to have a child. Then they think, okay, then, you know, he should be a good ruler, he should be kind to his citizens, he should be, you know, charitable, he should be very knowledgeable, he should make his decisions according to the scriptures, you know, like that. He should be very respectful to his, you know, seniors, you know, like that in the kingdom, and his parents, and the leaders of the what do you call it? You know, the leaders of the assembly, and, you know, be respectful to, you know, his elders and the citizenry and all these things like this. Then to protect the people, he must be expert at warfare,
mm-hmm.
you know, so then he should be an expert charioteer or this or that. You know, and the father has his you know, probably favorite weapons and favorite things and his favorite shastras, and the wife has hers. And so they discuss until they come down to something that is very nice.
Mm-hmm.
It's according to their nature.
Mm.
No one said it's against their nature, but they don't want something against their nature. So it's a foolish point to make in the first place, because they're making the point trying to say that you're wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Just that, no, no, we know it's all karma. But the point is according to karma, they're going to do it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a secondary thing.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you have to bring in? The point is making the point. See, there's the two points. You can discuss tattva and you can discuss culture, its application.
Mm.
So depending upon what you're doing, you're pointing out the technical, but you're going to bring it into the realm. Someone's going to accept it when you bring it down to the cultural level. You give the tattva, and intellectually they accept it. But to apply it, you have to show the culture of it.
Mm-hmm.
So what you're explaining is trying to show how the husband and wife are working together, and they're getting and it's increasing their relationship by this discussions and these plans.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, then it's creating, because the point is the desire for the child is on the emotional platform, basically. The
mm-hmm.
duty is there,
mm-hmm.
but the emotional platform is there, so on that emotional platform it's being
mm-hmm.
accepted,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's being
mm-hmm.
discussed. So when they just say, well, according to their karma, but then that just means, then yeah, according to karma, just like cats and dogs, if you just have sex.
Mm-hmm.
No, but according to their karma, they plan, they decide on the child, they do all that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so we're talking about people who do have good karma,
mm-hmm.
and who can plan their karma.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't think, you know, B.V. Raman was making this statement. You know, or Lahiri, or others who grew up in the Indian culture,
mm-hmm.
and know that this is the culture, and this is the shot. Because the point is the good astrologer knows Ayurveda. Because otherwise, how do you actually understand how the planets are working, because it applies to it creates the body.
Mm.
So now how the body functions is Ayurveda.
Mm.
It's, you know, maybe based on those planets, you know, but it's Ayurveda. But how the planets work, unless you know the Lord's energies, how do you understand the planets?
Mm.
Unless you understand psychology,
mm.
how do you understand the application?
Mm-hmm.
You know? Like this. So it's just like, so you have to know a lot more. The more one knows, the better.
Mm.
But if you want only, actually, if one only knows astrology, mm. he knows something, but he actually doesn't know very much.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have to apply it, unless you know the culture then.
Mm.
Like I remember one palmist, you know, was looking at some devotee's hand and looking at it and go, no marriage. You know, I mean, marriage is not suitable.
Mm-hmm.
And then they said, but, you know, there's a possibility that maybe something could happen, a marriage, but it's not really good. But this would be my recommendation, is that you get married, conceive a child, and then after a month anyway, that person would leave the ashram because it's just unsuitable for them. But the family line has continued.
Hmm.
Right? So this is his interpretation according to his values.
Hmm.
someone else would go, you know, because him carrying on to the family line is most important. You know?
For the devotee, he's an expert.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, but for the devotee, it's like, you know, marriage wouldn't work, it couldn't last than that. Don't even bother. Why go to so much endeavor? You know? I mean, you know, the family line has gone on, but now you're going to, you know, the wife is not going to be very pleased. You know, like that. Children are going to grow up without a father. Mm. You know? It's like that. And basically, what kind of dynasty you've left. Mm. You know, the two people don't even really know each other, so how can they have properly created a proper child? Mm. You know, so it's... But that's interpretation. And this person was a very big palmist in India. I mean, famous. I mean, in his day, you know, devotees who were into these things, they used to go to him. Big guy. And this is his thing, because they're all materialists. So, point is our devotees learn from these materialistic people. So now, naturally, they may have that flavor. So unless you can bring it across, you know, then into the devotion, or at least into the full spectrum of the Vedic, the culture and everything, then what's the meaning? You know? What's the meaning? So the point is you have to ask, well, what is the purpose of saying this? Because two people anyway, they have their karma, and according to that, they're going to want a particular kind of child. And then they're going to discuss. Otherwise, if the wife wants one and the husband wants another, then the kid will have a kid. It makes it hard for the kid to understand who he is. Like, I see so many kids. You know, I was just talking to one the other day, 20 years old. His mother is like, you know, full on pujari at the temple, and you know, very academic. I'm not sure if she doesn't teach in a school or something like that. And the father is like 101%, you know, business, you know, but scheming business, you know, not like you set up a big business, you know, and just study like that. It's all these schemes and this, and buy this and sell that, and then, well, what about this? And, you know, just that whole wheeling and dealing, right? So the kid can't really figure out what he should do, because he's very attracted to study more and all that, but he's also totally into wheeling and dealing. He's totally comfortable. He's 20 years old. He already knows how to do business, how to do this. He can fly around the world and buy from here and sell that. It's like, I go to America and I travel with the, you know, Festival of India and all that. But when I go, you know, he always takes a few things from India to sell on the side to make his money so that he could fly off to the next, you know, Rath Yatra somewhere else. And when he goes there, he takes some things to sell. And so you can see, as he has that attraction for just the spiritual association, spiritual study, spiritual programs, but at the same time he's doing his wheeling and dealing. So this is because the husband and wife hadn't planned on the kid. So you get this kid like this, and he can't. He wants to study, but, you know, he's got wanderlust, you know, and all that. And he has an opportunity to study and this and that. So it's kind of like study, wander, settle down, you know. Because he knows ultimately it's kind of like he's got to get into something. You know, so I said, we try the study, because it's there in the mind. You'll either get into it and get somewhere, or you decide, no, it's too peaceful. Then that chapter is closed. Then you wander around for a while, you get tired of it anyway. You know, and then you settle down. You know, so like this it's important. Like that. It just makes it much easier for training the children, makes the parents' job easier, makes the teacher's job easier, and makes the individual's life easier. Like that. So one can say, okay, according to the karma, it'll be there. So then according to the karma, it'll just be anything. So why bother with any samskaras, any marriages? You know, why bother even taking a bath? You know, why bother with anyone? Just lay in bed all day. You know, if it's your karma, you know, that, you know, you'll have a bath and, you know, it'll happen. Someone will come along, throw a bucket of water on you, you know, finish. You know, you've taken a bath, washed your clothes and your bedding. You know, just hang them up, you know. So the thing is one has to exercise because the point is the karma is there. Then generally, on the conditioned nature, will move within that. But you still have variety. You know? Still have variety.
Mm. if he likes the idea of lying there and someone throw a bucket away from
him. Then they'll just pick him up, because you just lay there because that's all you're doing. So then they'll get tired of that, and then they'll put you out in the sun, and everything will dry. And then, some brahmacharis will have gone for breakfast and brought back, tons of hollow leather stick in their almira, and then they'll see you there and ask if you want any. Like that, so you don't have to worry. Okay. So basically it means here from that country that all men on earth learn their several usages. That's Lord Chaitanya mentions that point, Bharata Bhumita Haila Manusha Janmajar. Those from here, it is their duty to go because they've experienced it. And all over the world they may not have experienced it. But the point is the essence, why? It's not that because they're born in the country that's the magical thing, it's because they're born and trained and they've experienced it. So if someone gets the experience or he has the association that gains that, then he has the brahminical nature, then he can teach it. But the point is that it's natural that someone from this place will have experienced it. They've seen it. To them it's real. It's alive. The people they grew up with valued it. They've learned also and been trained in it. They value it. They practice it. It means whatever they read in the sacred law to them makes sense. It's not some esoteric thing, or it's not just a bunch of, restricting rules that don't seem to apply. Because it says here, let him teach all men on earth. It means all over the world. That means that this law can be taught to everybody. But it must be taught by someone who has experienced it. Mm-hmm. Like that. Otherwise, it doesn't work. Like that. That's the essence. Yeah. Okay, then 21. That country which lies between the Himavat and the Vindhya Mountains, to the east of Prayag and to the west of Vinasan, Vinasana, a place where the river Saraswati disappears, is called Madhya Desh, the central region. So that means your whole, basically UP. UP, and where does it disappear? Disappears into India. Gujarat. Okay. It goes down at that time. Yeah, at that time I think it goes down, and then later it comes up. It's changed directions. It used to flow to the sea and then it would flow inland. But basically it means, because he says Prayag, so it's like UP, Gujarat, Rajasthan, Himachal Pradesh, part of Punjab, like that. Kashmir is part of that? No, it's below Kashmir. Then that. And it says up to the Himavan, so that would mean also Nepal. Part of Nepal, that lower part of Nepal. Janak was there, Sita Devi's from that area. But the track between those two mountains, just mentioned, which extends as far to the eastern and western oceans, the wise called Aryavarta, the country of the Aryans. So the Aryans in total are between the Himalayas and the Vindhya Mountains, which means Madhya Pradesh, from the Indian Ocean to the Bay of Bengal. Like that. So that would be what we would call basically, North India, Panchadevita. That would be that area. So that is the Aryan Desh. Like in South, the Dravidians, they're Dravidians, and they call the North Aryans. Mm-hmm. And that's why sometimes you have the fights between the Brahmins and the original South Indian people, the Tamil people, because they say the Brahmins aren't Dravidians, they're Aryans, they're from the North, which is true. So that whole place is specifically, that place is meant for following Vedic culture. The people naturally follow it, they like to follow it. It's they're born there to follow it. Like that. That's why that's there. So that's the whole thing of Aryavarta. And then when it just takes from UP over to the Saraswati, that is the Madhya. That's the main area. And then within that, then smaller seems to be this, what is it called? Yeah, that is the country of the Brahmarshis. It doesn't say what the name is. And then smaller than that is Brahmavarta. Mm-hmm.
And he's all going to make the offering because Krishna should be blessed to be.
Oh, you know how to make the offering?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, please. Offer your obeisances. See, one must know and one must practice. Okay, so that is the whole spectrum, you know? I mean, it's the whole Aryavarta, and then you have the Madhya Desh, and then you have a little smaller than that, where the Rishis and all that stay, and then smaller than that. So, that land where the black antelope naturally roams, one must know to be fit for the performance of sacrifices. The track different from that is the country of the Mleches, the barbarians. So, because the black buck is, it says fit for performance of sacrifice, because the Brahmin brahmacharis, they wear the black buck skin. Like that. So that's why specifically that's important for sacrifice, because then they're available. So that means, in other words, this is the area where Brahmins can prosper. Mm-hmm. Like that. We must understand that all this, it's a matter of one becomes a devotee, then, you know, the aspect of the Brahmin. But what was being pointed out here is the importance of learning the culture that is practiced in these places. Mm-hmm. In other words, means the culture that is mentioned here is for practicing in these places, and it's meant to be spread all over the world by those who have been trained in this. Mm-hmm. Like that. That's the point. You know, I mean, you can take this to be, you know, totally nationalistic Indian. These things, that's the scriptures are written in such a way that everybody can take what they want from it. Mm-hmm. Like the Pitu Maharaj, you know, milks the earth. So then Bhumi Devi took the form of a cow, and then all the different personalities of the universe came, and they each took what they wanted. Mm-hmm. Like that. So that's the whole thing, is the Vedic literatures are like that. They're like, mm-hmm. like the cow, is that you want to become more materialistically involved, they'll give you that. You want to become liberated, you know, they'll give you that. You want devotion, you can get that, you know. So you can get whatever you want, depending upon how you take it. Not ready?
Mm-hmm.
Bhaman is making the offer.
No, he's already split.
But he's going to make the offer. Okay. Let twice-born men seek to dwell in those above-mentioned countries. But a Shudra, distressed for subsistence, may reside anywhere. Like that. So it's, in other words, one should always try to live in those places where there is good association. Mm. So if you have a temple, you have a nice community, it doesn't matter where it is in the world. That is, in other words, these are the places where the Lord performs his activities. You see, most of the tirthas are all in these areas. Mm. You know, so many of the holy places, holy rivers, you know, the Lord's pastimes, everything is happening in these areas. Krishna's pastimes, Ram's pastimes, Lord Chaitanya's pastimes, so many of the different avatars or pastimes are all happening in these places. Maybe they also happen in other places, but this is especially important. Mm. So, wherever you have nice temple, nice community, good association of qualified, cultured people, then it says here, those who are interested in the higher values of life, the dvijas, they should always reside in those places. But it says a Shudra, because his mentality is, that is there, but it's kind of can be secondary. Because of the nature, they're distressed very easily. So if they get too distressed, even in that place, and they can't maintain them, then they can go anywhere. Because for them, you know, as Krishna mentions, don't disturb the minds of the ignorant. Because if they're too worried about their physical maintenance and all these things like that, then let them do that. Because then they're satisfied and peaceful. Then in that peaceful state, whatever little bit they can do in Krishna consciousness, mm-hmm. then they can do. Mm-hmm. But even if they're in great association, if they're too much in distress, they can't take advantage. Mm-hmm. You know, because you mentioned the philosophy, it just doesn't absorb so easily. It's kind of like, that's all very nice, but what about the reality of
it?
Yeah, like that. So it's better to not do. So they can go anywhere. But otherwise, for those who have a dvija conditioned nature, they should be a little bit more, you know, careful. You know, even if it means, you know, okay, they can make better business somewhere else, but they stay in the community of devotees. It may not be as good a business. They're doing business. You know, instead of becoming a billionaire, they only become a millionaire. You know, but whatever, it's fine, you know. And those who manage, okay, maybe they could have bigger facilities somewhere else, but better they stay here where they have the association and, you know, it'll be appreciated more. And then the Brahmins, naturally, wherever there's going to be proper performance of sacrifice. A Brahmin living on his own out in the middle of nowhere, it's very difficult. Because his duties, his teaching and all these different things, how he'll do. Like that. So in other words, the leaders must understand how to advise. Because if you have a member of the community who has an artist nature, if he's too distressed and just can't stay, you let him go. Don't force. Don't make him feel bad. Because later he may also go out and decide that was not right, and he'll come back. Because they also need that. They feel the feeling of shelter and the kind of emotional stability. So, but because of the distress of subsistence, they've gone out. But then they find that actually the distress of bad association is worse. You know, so they'll come back because they will feel welcome. But if you push them too much, it's hard on them. It's harsh for them. Mm-hmm. And then they may not come back. Mm-hmm. You know, they may feel, you know, left out. Huh?
Exploited,
or they not properly directed, or not cared for, mm-hmm. like that, or, you know, you're just trying to manage them, and yeah, like that. So it's, they think, huh? So like that. So let them go, you know, and then like that. But if they have a dvija nature, then you can put a little bit more pressure. And basically, according to their level, is Vaishya, you put more, a little bit more pressure. You know, Kshatriya more than that, Brahmin more than that. Like that. But it should be balanced. You know, one has to be able to, the managers must understand this. It's not that just everybody they treat the same. This is the problem. There's a point, Chanakya makes that point. Is that that leader who treats all of his dependents the same will fail. Mm-hmm. Each one has to be dealt with differently because they're all different nature. You know, the major categories you have to deal with Brahmins different than Kshatriyas, different from Vaishyas, different from Shudras. And within that, everybody's an individual, and you must deal like that. So the leader must understand these things. Yeah, he has to be expert. You know, he has to be expert. Means being able to just manage is you know, definite qualification. But it's like from those who can manage, you have to look for those who can understand how to deal with people. Mm. Like that. You know, and then with those who can deal with people, those who can apply it according to a standard. Right? And within that, the standard that is given by Krishna and the Acharyas. So the Vedas start the opposite way. Generally, we look for who manages. Okay, who are the managers, and then you cut down from there. That's what we just mentioned. The Vedic system would be the opposite. You would start who can follow the culture themselves, who is able to give example to others, and then who can deal with others and psychologically deal. Then within that, then you look for someone who can manage. Because if they can deal, then they're, you know, if they can follow to some degree themselves, understand, follow the dvijas within that, who can actually have influence on others, then you have Brahmins and Kshatriyas. Mm. And then within that, who can manage and who doesn't, then you, like that, you choose. Mm-hmm. So it goes the opposite. But, you know, either way you do it, you want to get the point. But you have to consider all those steps. Like that. So if you do it frontwards or back, it's easier if you do it, you know, frontwards. But you can do it backwards, like the Western system. That's right. Does that make sense?
Okay. Well, like in our society, everybody follows Brahminical culture. At least everybody's supposed to. Well, you certainly have the artists you kind of push. Yeah. How do you kind of like figure out who is an artist, but at the same time who's following them?
See, the culture is because the overall values are devotional.
Yeah.
The goal is devotional.
Yeah.
And their basic understanding, philosophy and all that is there.
Yeah.
But then you start to see by technical points. Can they get into the technical philosophy? Do they work from concepts down to details? Do they start from or they just deal with details? You know? Then, if they just deal with details, then you're basically dealing with vaishyas and shudras.
Something specific that, like, some people do like to learn Brahmanical things, but once they learn it, they never do it again.
That'll be a vaishya.
Mm. You learn how to make a sannyas dana once, I know, and never make again.
You have to see. It means there's no determination.
Yeah.
It means it can't continue. That's the mode of ignorance. They want to learn it. That's passion. But it can't continue, that's ignorance. So passion and ignorance makes a vaishya. You know? Or if they're learning it because it's interesting, it's an art. You know? It's like something they want to know, that's one thing. But if it's an art, you know, you're dealing with the cloth, the fine things, the strings, you're making something very aesthetic, that may be the artist. You know? And if that is the kind of art he likes to do, he could continue with it. But how you tell him is he's always in anxiety. You know, there's great happiness, great anxiety. It's not steady, you know. It's always anxiety, always problems.
Yeah.
Like that. They're always having difficulty. They themselves have difficulty, like, organizing their own scene. They can do it, it's slow, and that, and there's always an anxiety about it. So that would be the shudra conditioning.
Yeah. Are all shudras like that?
Basically, to some degree or not. There's always anxiety. That's what it means. Shudra means to lament. The root of it, you know?
Socha.
Means to lament. And that they're always lamenting about this, that. It may be very subtle, but they're always lamenting. You know? That aspect is always there. You know? They're always lamenting. Well, the Vaishya, he'll do is if he sees some profit in it. Like, he wants to learn it. He knows if he goes through it, he gains it. So he sees the gain of the knowledge. That is his profit. You know, or gain of the skill, that is his profit. And so he does it. Oh, it turned around. So that's what he's looking for. You know? You have to see the subtleties of how they work, how the brain works. The kshatriya, it's you're conquering it. You know? You conquer this knowledge. You know, here's the knowledge, I'll conquer that. You know, here's the challenge to learn the Sanskrit. You know, I'll learn the Sanskrit. You know, I'll learn this, but it's a challenge. The other one, the Vaishya, it's a profit. You know? And for the Brahman, it's just the knowledge itself is the ocean that they move in. That's their body, you know, that they move in, their field. They're happy in that. The Kshatriya has conquered it, and now he will use it. You know, like I've learned, you know, the weapon, and I will use it. I've learned the politics, I will use it. I know Sanskrit, I will use it. Like that. For the Brahman, it's just he's happy in that realm. Like that. So it's, you know, like that. So if they're not devotees, it can even be knowledge for knowledge's sake, which is the dangerous. That's, even if they come to Krishna consciousness, that's the jigyasu. And they may leave, like we see many, many pandits, is they get the knowledge and then they leave because all they wanted was the knowledge. They weren't actually interested in Krishna. Okay, it's in line with Krishna, it's nice. If you can go to the Rath Yatra and sell the bananas, but they're going to sell the bananas. They can see the Rath also. Rather than they're going to the Rath Yatra, and then they can also sell bananas. You know, it's which is the emphasis. That makes a difference. The difference in the Varnas is very subtle. Very, very subtle. Yes.
I wonder if there's some class of people who, let's say, have a different qualifications, like Brahminical qualifications, they need to be teachers or they're managerial, but they have one quality in common that they don't never change. Once they have certain views, they're very inflexible in changing those views. As we see, like in previously, like let's say somebody was following certain type of philosophy and then somebody came and defeated him, naturally he would accept this thing as he knows more than he knows.
Mm.
So how would you classify this kind of...
It's just there's more pride. Uh-huh. There's more... They're proud of their ability. Uh-huh. You know? Because the point is motive goodness means that there is passion and ignorance in it. But the point is it's predominantly mode of goodness, so you call it mode of goodness. Mm-hmm. You know? Like if you have a forest and it's predominantly one kind of tree, you will say it's a forest of that tree. Though there may be some percentage, you know, 10, 15, 20% of other trees, but you'll still call it that kind of forest. So predominantly it's the mode of goodness, Hare Krishna. Predominantly it's the mode of goodness. You need something?
No.
Oh, okay.
Nothing specific.
Oh, just, okay. So,
I mean, Krishna's mercy.
Oh, yes. You can talk to the pujari there. Maybe he has some stashed away he can give you. So then that's predominance, but there may be passion and ignorance in that. So someone who's very saintly, you'll see it's predominantly more, it means... Let's say, just to give a rough kind of idea, you have that predominance of that mode of goodness. Then in what's left, it's not mode of goodness, someone who has very good character, and that portion may also be goodness, right? But that's extra. Someone else, there may be more passion or more ignorance. So therefore you get these Brahmins who are very proud, you know, and can be very rough. You know, you read about them in the scriptures, you know, many times the court scholar, you know, like that, the pundit, the priest. Sometimes he's very nasty and he puts up these things just to prove himself that, you know, they'll give a big reward to anybody who can defeat him. You know, but if they lose, you know, cut off their ears or, you know, they have to become his servants and stuff like that. They're really nasty people. But these generally are not devotees. You'll generally see this kind of thing happening in the non-devotees, you know, like that. You know, so then, so that aspect, that is, you know, like that, what is it? That was with Yamunacharya. Yamunacharya came to debate with the, was he the Rajguru?
Yeah.
He was the Rajguru, the king, Kolahari.
Kolahara.
So then, when he came, because he was only 8 years old, you know, and Indian kids when they're 8, they're quite small, you know. So then he came into the assembly. You know, the queen just saw Yamunacharya, and she just said, "He's the winner. This is the man." You know, you know. But then the king is, "Okay, let him speak. Calm down." You know, and then he says, "I've come to." You know, they ask, "What do you want?" He says, "I've come to." Come to argue with you. And then Kolahari said, you know, but you're so small, how can I fight with you? And then Yamunacharya said, well, if size is the judgment of scholarship, then that means the water buffalo would be the greatest scholar, you know. So then I think this time the queen even got more fired up at, you know, this is
actually Yamunacharya came with the best elephant in the whole kingdom, because the person, because Yamunacharya's guru was also defeated by the court pundit, so he was paying taxes, and Yamunacharya is such a bright scholar that the teacher used to just get completely fed up with the kids, because Yamunacharya would just play with the kids the whole day. He would just go on party crowd and say, okay, Yamunacharya, you take care of the school, he's 8 years old, and just disappear. In 2 months parikram time, he will teach the whole year of curriculum to the kids, and the teacher will come back, then for 10 months he'll have to endure their playing. So, you know, like, so his parikram started becoming longer and longer, it was more with the kids. So one day these guys came and said, okay, now you have to pay all the tax, your teacher is lost. How can you say my teacher is lost? He's the greatest old teacher, that the Yamunacharya said. And he said, you know, I want to argue with this pundit, you know, I'm the lowest of his disciples, I can still defeat him because my teacher is so great. So then they went back and told this to the king, and the king's pundit, and they flipped out, look here, you know. So they came back and they said, immediately you come and have the argument, because the pundit was very proud and he was like really hurt by it. He said, if you want to come, you got this in the session. You know? So the elephant came and like a whole thing, and hundreds of people playing bugles and drums and everything. And then, the elephant, then he marched in, and King's wife was in excess.
Yeah. So this is an example of a bad Brahmin, you know? And Yamunacharya is an example of good, because he's arguing on respect of his teacher. teacher has taught him. It means he has learned these things, even though he may have surpassed his teacher. But the teacher has to have been, has to get the credit that he could have given the knowledge that they could have surpassed. Therefore, the student always respects, even though he may have surpassed. Means the student's students, you know, and after him, like we'll see, Yamunacharya is greater than his teacher. But Yamunacharya will always see, it's my teacher is the one who gave me this. Even though by Krishna's grace I can use it in many wonderful ways. But he still sees that, he still has a respect for the teacher, because he has to respect, therefore others respect him. If he thinks, yes, I'm the greatest, my teacher's not so good, then no one will respect him. But he maintains that respect. Even though the person in the lower position may be better, may be more qualified, he still has that respect for the higher, because it's from there that is the source of their... It's through that person that their benefit has come. You understand Krishna's giving it. Like that. So, in this way, then it can be. We have to use the right... Like that. We need water. It is. Right. So therefore, a student who is better can respect the wife who, you know, may have so many good qualities and figure she's more dynamic, can still respect the a junior leader and a senior can respect. It can always happen. That's things, because that's just culture. Like that. Okay, thus has the origin of the sacred law been succinctly described to you, and the origin of this universe. Learn now the duties of the castes and varnas. Okay, so this ends the origin of the sacred law and the origin of the universe. Like that, because the origin is the same. So up to now, he's described everything up to there, and, you know, basically who's qualified to teach it and everything like that. Okay, so then I guess we could... Is there any other points on this? And then tomorrow then we'll get into starting the Varnas.
Shankaracharya time there was a Brahmin, he joined the Buddhist school just to defeat the Buddhists. So like a fighter. So he was a perfect Brahmin and everything. He just joined the Gurukul then Buddhist, and they said, you know, I just came to study, I don't know anything. So he took his Brahmin tail off and went and studied with them for 10 years. He just knew the whole Buddhist doctrine like really good. He went to the grandson of Ashok, King Ashok, who was promoting Buddhism. He went to his court and he challenged all his pundits there in the court, all the Buddhists. Okay, we'll have something, a debate. Just defeated everybody. He had some like 108 pundits. Just defeated all one by one. Defeated them all. He said, now you have to take up Vaishnavism.
Shankara's?
It was Shankara's time. Shankara went to take darshan of him.
Whose disciple was he?
I don't know. He was burning himself in a Bhute fire. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because that was like that takes the longest. He was atoning for offending his guru. And then the Buddhist said to the king, you know, don't believe this man is actually a tantric. He's still making some politics. So he defeated us by tantra, because we are so knowledgeable, no, we can defeat us in some.
What was Ahula's husband's name?
Gautama.
Gautama was it?
Yeah.
Thank you.
So then he said, you know, let's have some actual feat that is only capable by God, because we didn't believe the existence of God. And if you can do that, then we accept that you are actually the representative of God and you have the proper philosophy. So the king said, what should I ask him to do? So then they said, there's a big mountain by your kingdom, you should jump off, and if he survives, you accept that his God will protect him. They went up, climbed up this mountain, they stood down on the edge, and the king was there with all the courtiers and everybody in his skin. If the Vedas are true, as transcendental knowledge, describing, he said, if Mother Veda is true, describing her father, Supreme Personality of Godhead, then I should stay alive and jump, and he stayed alive. He lost the sight of one of his eyes on impact. And then Shankaracharya asked him why. He said, because I offended my Buddhist teachers, because I was arrogant with them and I was arguing with them. What I was learning from Buddhists, and I would make fun of the doctrine. So I should have argued in a more cultured way. So I lost it on my eyes. Because Guru gives Divya Chakshush. So it's not Divya, he said, but it is knowledge that he can see with. So I lost it on my eyes. So he's atoning for that by giving up his body on a Gute fire. And actually when you're sitting on a fire, Shankaracharya went to see him to get this Chairakabhasya approved by him.
So this is the one that was sitting in the fire.
So while sitting in the fire he ran. He said, yeah, but the purpose is good, for defeating Buddhists and having people lose faith in Buddhism is good, okay, go for it. So the Vaishnava get the sanction for Chairakabhasya.
Is that the one where he went to and he wanted to... But there was one he wanted to go to and he wanted to... that was somebody else, some big Karmakandi. He wanted to argue with him. He was old and, you know, and he's preparing the fire, putting the kusa, and they're sitting and they're burying him up to the neck. And he says, I want to argue with him. He says, I'm sorry, I'm busy.
He also yesterday he can argue with Shankaracharya.
Yesterday.
For 8 days and 8 nights. There's no conclusion to the argument. But they're arguing, and then one of the disciples of Shankaracharya came and said, you know, I know that you have Vyasadeva and you are Shiva, so okay. So they stopped and then Vyasadeva.
Oh, they stopped.
Yeah, there's no conclusion. Because everybody is attending the class, but then solicitors started pulling off because they couldn't understand what was going on.
What they were talking about.
Yeah, so then one disciple was still sitting there and was like, wow, this is shocking. And then after 8 days he figured this was something.
Well, the fun thing is that you get into is that for the ordinary person it may look like
But he also said that you all both speaking about the same thing, so it's like a useful debate.
On Advaitacharya's request, Gauranga Nityananda sat down to eat, while Advaita Prabhu stood there to serve them. On seeing this, Gauranga smiled and said to Sitana, sacrifice can never be successful without the presence of Lord Shiva. Advaita Prabhu smiled and said, you are the origin of Shiva. By your grace, all living entities can attain auspiciousness. Mahaprabhu then said, give up this pretension. I cannot eat without you. Then Nityananda laughed loudly and said, O kind-hearted Gauranga, please listen to me. Don't pay much attention to this gluttonous brahmana. If he eats with four hands, he will still be unsatisfied. Sometimes he eats as voraciously as fire. No one else has such mystic potency. Hearing this, Sri Advaita laughed and said in loving anger, you enjoy in one place after another like a showman who displays different forms. You alone eat with unlimited mouths. So who is able to satisfy your hunger? Gauranga smiled while listening to Nityananda and Advaita reveal the truth about each other. Taking the role of a mediator, Mahaprabhu said, you two are comparable in your eating. In a mood of pure devotion, Advaita Prabhu replied, you alone are immeasurable in this world. Unlimited universes are balanced by you. I don't see any scale that can perform such a feat. Thus, Mahaprabhu and the two Prabhus directly and indirectly revealed the absolute truth. After eating, the three lords took rest. So in other words, here, it's an argument to someone else that will look like this. You know, he's calling him gluttonous brahmana, and yeah, you just wander around. But they're revealing the truth. He has four arms. You know, he's Mahavishnu. He'll be unsatisfied, you know, like that. He eats as voraciously as fire, because he comes through fire. He's the fire of digestion. You know, like this, and, you know, has such mystic potency. And then you know, you move from place to place, you're in so many places, because Nityananda expands in all the Vishnumurtis, you know, other than, I mean, yeah, it means that's the main why the two are presented, because Nityananda, Mahanarayan, expands as all the Vishnu forms, but then there's also the other expansion as the three Purusha avatars. Mm-hmm. Because the other Vaikuntha expansions is the mood is I am God, mm-hmm. while the Purusha avatars is I am the creator, maintainer, and destroyer, like that. So it's slight difference in flavor, mm-hmm. like that. And because he deals with the material energy, then he enters it through the aspect of the Sadashiv. So he's known as Tamasi. So it takes on a different flavor. So Shankarshan is the main flavor. That's why the two of them bonds, they are so close, mm. like that, because the Shankarshan aspect is main. Well, when he expands throughout Vaikuntha, the Vasudeva aspect is main. Mm. You know? Does that make some sense? Mm. In other words, Krishna expands as Balaram. Mm. Balaram is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Mm. The only difference is Krishna is black, Balaram is white. There's absolutely no other difference. Mm. But in their mood, there is a major difference, mm. because Krishna is the enjoyer only, mm. while Balaram is the enjoyer. He's the Supreme Lord, plus he is the servant. He's servant of Godhead. Mm. So all the Vaikuntha, so then when he expands as Vasudeva Shankarshan Prajumna Nadi Ruda, Vasudeva will have more of he is the Lord enjoyer, mm-hmm. and Shankarshan will have more the mood of the servitor Godhead. And then that taken a step further, he takes the form of Ananta, where his mood is just that of servant, mm-hmm. though he's God. Mm-hmm. So here he brings out these places that you enjoy in one place after another, like a showman. So he's always performing his pastimes, and all the avatars are coming from him. And you alone eat with unlimited mouths, with Ananta. Mm-hmm. So he's showing these different flavors of that, and then you eat with four hands, and then so in this is that the Vyasadeva and Shankar, they can be arguing, but they can be also arguing on this level, because here is Vyasadeva and here is Lord Shiva, and then they're arguing in this. So for the ordinary person, it'll look like one thing, that what they're arguing is that they're just having Krishna katha. It's not even an argument, you know, but it's presented like that because it's pastime, because here's Vyasadeva and Shankara. So that's also an important consideration.
Not in the server, sometimes you can throw a float on the water and Advaita Acharya will lie down on him.
Yeah, yeah. No, that comes up, that came up after, just at the end of that.
Ananta Mahavishnu.
Yeah. Where is that?
After today, we have every day, every year, before Advaita, when the devotees go to Maranatha. They go to Gambhira's house when the devotees arrive and they give up prasadam.
Yes, it says after performing Sankirtan for a long time, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his devotees went to take bath. As the pure devotees engaged in water sports, Sri Advaita and Nityananda had great fun. Then in ecstasy, Gaura had Advaita lie down on the water. Mahaprabhu then climbed on Advaita's chest. And my lord then floated in the water carrying Gaura. No one could understand the potency that they exhibited at that time. The devotees were all overwhelmed in loving ecstasy. Gauranga enjoyed pastimes lying on Advaita just as Mahavishnu lies on a bed of Ananta Seif. Seeing this, the wonderful manifestation of the pastimes as human beings, all the devotees chanted, Hari, Hari. After performing the pastimes of Seisha Shayi in this way, Gauranga went with his associates to honor Advaitacharya's invitation. As Sri Chaitanya, this is very nice, notice here, is honor his invitation. You see, he'd been invited. You know, so in other words, the others are making arrangements. Lord Chaitanya, sannyasi, is not making his arrangements. Others are making arrangements, like that. Mm-hmm. So when the point is being made, sannyasi should be more detached, this, that, then it should be they don't make the arrangements, let others make the arrangements. Mm-hmm. You know, like that. If they wanna, like that. Mm-hmm. As Sri Chaitanya ate along with his associates, Sitanath glorified him in great ecstasy. I was unable to see this wonderful pastime, which could be seen only by the most fortunate. I was purified simply by drinking the nectar of these topics as they emanated from the lotus mouth of Sri Nityananda Prabhu. So he heard them from Nityananda. It's interesting, the prayer at the end is the same like in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Praying at the lotus feet of Lord Chaitanya and Sri Advaita, always desiring their mercy, I Isha Nagara narrate Sri Advaita Prakash. Very similar to the to the Chaitanya Charitamrita.
At the end of Chaitanya Bhagavata, the tomb of Sri Krishna and Sri Krishna Chaitanya and Bhagavata in their lives.
Okay, so then we'll end here. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai.